Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Blue Jays Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. The Jays are coming off of another series win against the Rockies after a pretty brutal start.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Blue Jays Center.
Bautista drives it deep left field.
The sickest Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It's gonna be sick.
Cole Whiston, Rob Pentalaman, and James Price here with you again to talk Blue Jays baseball. The Jays are coming off of another series win, like I said, but in game one, it felt like the world was going to end. Rob.
that Friday game wasn't pretty. There's still some ugly redeemable things we'll talk about, specifically Kevin Gausman's performance. He struggled yet again. But yeah, 2 out of 3, all you can really hope for. You see the Rockies on your schedule, you get a little greedy. Hey, maybe we can take all three. Unfortunately, as we all know, baseball doesn't quite work like that. All you need to do is really just win series. You won 2 out of 3, you did your job. Now you got a huge series starting tonight against the Yankees, which we're all very excited for. So right now, coming off that series win, the vibes are good. 2 series at home, 2 series wins.
To be clear, they lost 12-4, got out hit 20-11, the most hits on the road for the Rockies since 2013, and Kevin Gausman had another rough start. James?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned off the top, Cole, that it felt like the world was falling apart, because we all said it, right? You a series win is a full-on must, and after that 12-4 loss, I mean, you knew you had Berríos in the finale, but you didn't know what you were going to get for Yariel Rodriguez. So, boys, that Friday night was tough. But look, Yariel Rodriguez looked great. Berríos, I mean, God, continues to look outstanding. And they did the job that they were supposed to do. But yeah, like you mentioned, the Yankees are in town starting tonight. It's going to be tough, fellas.
Yeah, let's get into specifics about the Rockies series. Kevin Gausman, we'll start there. I don't think it takes much to get into, really. We're not worried. It's definitely, you know, his worst start as a Jay, but it's also his slowest start in terms of just getting warmed up. He had 3 innings of spring training under his belt, and now he's, you know, ramping himself up in the major leagues in actual starts that mean something. So, by all means, the three of us aren't necessarily worried about Kevin Gausman, but to flip-flop that to the other side of the ball, Jose Berríos and our take about him being this team's ace might actually be coming true, especially based off of Kevin Gausman's recent performances, James.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And we talked about it right away. I think it was probably in the first episode we talked about it, about how it's quite possible, you know, with Gausman having the slow start to the season, how Berríos, he has the opportunity to do so. And boy, fellas, is he ran with this to start the year. The best 4-game stretch to start his career, or to start any season of his career. He has been lights out. But as for Kevin Gausman, you mentioned about being worried. I'm really not. Now, I don't know the exact numbers as to how it went down, but I don't know if the Rockies have the same weird pixie dust stuff that the Twins do against Kevin Gausman, because I believe his last start in Colorado, where I was there, he was bad there too in Colorado last season in September, where, you know, Jays are going for a playoff spot. You got Gausman against the Rockies. You think, sure, we're going to win. He got teed off on in that game. Next time they see him this year, it doesn't look great either. So I don't know if there's any correlation, but yeah.
Gotcha. You're saying great. You're saying it might be, even just be more than just him warming up.
It's possibly both. Yeah. I think. I mean, the velocity still wasn't as high. Mm-hmm. It actually diminished as the game went along. So that could be because of, again, not pitching a whole lot in the spring. That's a, you know, when your stuff's not lasting a long time, that's a contributing factor. And also, they just seemed on everything. Like, I can't remember, it was Nolan Jones or something, hit like a double, and it was like a splitter right off the dirt. And I'm like, okay, something's not right here. Like, that just feels, it gives me those Minnesota Twins vibes of the last few seasons. So I'm not worried about Gauz. But you one more start like that against the Padres, I think it's going to be against, and you might start thinking it because it's going to be hot in San Diego.
Yeah, so we'll go even actually to correct you there, Pricey. They're actually playing the Yankees. He's actually going to start against the Yankees on Wednesday. He'll be at home against the Yankees on Wednesday. So yeah, still obviously a very, very tough, tall task for him. I would agree with the sentiment that you're not overly concerned because, again, the track record, you tend to default to that a little bit more with a guy like that. I do wish it would have gone. I mean, obviously, duh, well, you wish it would have gone better. But I thought the Rockies, that was a team that was a good opportunity to get back on the horse after a couple rough ones. And now you have a bad – like, the Rockies are a good offensive team, but a big part of that is due to the fact they play 81 home games in the most hitter-friendly ballpark. Like, objectively, not a good lineup. Just not a good team, period, that the Rockies are. So I thought really good opportunity for Kevin Gausman to get back on the horse. I did feel like between a lot of those hard-hit balls, 10 hits is a lot. He did have some he did throw some good splitters in there, got some swing and misses. There were a couple of them that I would say he made a good pitch and the Rockies were all on it and just hit it the other way. Good pitch on a breaking ball and a splitter there. But more so, it was a lot of pitches that caught the plate. Not really fooling guys, mm-hmm. falling behind guys, a lot of hard contact. I'm a little discouraged. I'm not concerned. I think he'll bounce back. But yeah, I thought that it was a little bit of a missed opportunity there to get back on the horse against a bad team.
Yeah, completely. And we'll stick with the pitching as we go through this series. Yair Rodriguez got the start in Game 2, and we were unaware of what they were going to do with that game, whether they were going to let Bowden start the game and have, you know, Yarrell come in afterwards. That was the exact opposite, actually. Not only did they yet Yarrell start, we thought that it would be an opener kind of thing. No, they let him go up until his pitch count, which was, surprisingly to me, 70 pitches. I didn't think they were going to let him go that long. And guess what? He was dominant for all 70 of them, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, he really looked awesome. Unfortunately, I had to rewatch the game a little later because I was unavailable at the time. I was working. But from watching it over, you saw, like, the fastball looked really good. It hit 95, 96 repeatedly. Touched 98, I think, at one point. That was the hardest he threw. 97 mm-hmm. point something, I believe, was the exact number. Just really good stuff. I did feel as though a lot of the strikeouts, he did hang some pitches, did hang some off-speed stuff that probably a better lineup would have taken more of an advantage of. But nevertheless, navigated through a lineup, your big league start, always, no matter who you're playing a big league lineup in your first game, the heartbeat's always going to be rushing. It's always impressive to go out there and give up just one run in 3 2/3, striking out 6. And I think more so big picture, it was just time, man. I think we mentioned how this season, this value proposition is that you have so many starters that, you know, look, you have a Bowden Francis, an unproven commodity in that fifth slot, but look, you have Alek Manoah, who knows now after that throwaway season last year how he would do. Ricky Tiedemann, when will he come up and make an impact? Yariel Rodriguez, there were a lot of options, but it seemed as though none of those guys were really ready at the moment. So you kind of sit there scratching your head. Well, if none of the guys are ready, you need to keep throwing out Bowden Francis there, who looked very uncompetitive and unimpressive in his first two outings. And it was just really good for the Blue Jays to decide, look, man, we invested money in this guy. I know he's not getting paid a lot this season. I know he's got an innings limit. It's a lot more about development in year one, but you got to get some value out of this guy. He was one of your bigger offseason acquisitions, and I'm glad that they're deciding to teach him on the fly, throw out in the major leagues. It's not as if Bowden Francis is really knocking down the door for that fifth starter spot. So, yeah, it was really nice to see them make a decision, go a little bit less conservative, and have him start, and it worked out well. They won a game. That was the first time they've won a game this season from that fifth starter slot. So, yeah, positive for me.
I'm going to go on the other side of the whole not letting him go all the way. Just the fact, and Cole, you mentioned it in the chat when it was happening. He only threw basically two pitches in that game.
Yeah, he did.
Dude's got an arsenal. And the fact that his majority was that slider and his fastball, I think that was just the fact of it's your MLB debut. You're playing the crappy Rockies.
Keep it simple.
Your stuff is great.
Keep it simple, yeah.
Yeah, keep it simple. Throw two pitches. And other than the absolute hanging slider that he threw to, was it Rogers or I don't know, Brendan Doyle, Rob's buddy? You know, other than that, I think he was great. Yeah. I love the different sort of tempo that he plays with. I love that he's got the different arm slots. And the one thing that I thoroughly enjoyed is when he lost command, what inning was that? The second inning? I can't remember which inning it was. He found it again.
Yep.
And that is so crucial in the big leagues, right? You can lose the zone and things can spiral out of control on you. Well, for him in his big league debut, it didn't. He's got that fire. He's got that little spunk to him. I like it, guys. I like the different looks he gives hitters. And once he starts using his other pitches more, it's just going to add a different element to him. So very nice MLB debut for him and a lot more to go. And I think his first start will be against San Diego. So
Let me ask you, Cole. He had a lot of different deliveries there. You saw him kind of little Johnny Cueto. They're not quite the Nestor Cortez that we saw yesterday.
Oh my God.
He literally tried to throw hitters off slightly there throughout the course of the ball game. Do you think that, like, how do you feel about a guy doing that in his first big league start? Is that you advise against that, or you're impressed? How do you feel about it?
So the thing with Yairo Rodriguez that people might not necessarily know is that he's known for his, you know, experience internationally, but with Cuba, not his international experience with Korea, which he or in Japan. One of the two, he has adapted to that pitching style as well. And those are the guys that we see, the Asian guys. We see those guys come in with the hezzy. And then obviously it's translated to other North American stars, Marcus Stroman, Johnny Cueto. So I want to say that that's how he's probably pitched for, you know, the last 10 years of his life. So it's something he's obviously very comfortable with. And he knows that, you know, with a 95-mile-per-hour fastball, topping out at 96, let's say, 97, you know, he's got to have something else if he's going to be a two-pitch pitcher, especially in his big league debut. So adding the hezzy, as long as he feels comfortable with it, is exactly what I think we'll see a lot more of down the road. Because, you know, if you're not blown by guys, then and you don't have a full arsenal available to you that night, then you're going to have to add something to the mix. And to segue perfectly, it goes against Bowden Francis. He doesn't have it. He doesn't have something else that he can go to. He has, you know, his two pitches that he relies heavily on. His fastball, he relies very heavily on, and the fastball just isn't good enough to do that. So if you don't have something else to throw hitters off in today's game, you're going to get hit around. And I'm glad to see that in day one, like you said, I'm glad to see the confidence and the hesitation for Yairo Rodriguez, and it worked out in his favor.
Rob, also, can I jump in there for a second?
Yeah, go ahead, Ben.
Now, you mentioned confidence, Cole. That's the big one for me. You don't want a guy crapping down his leg. I mean, it's a big league debut. You kind of expect it, but for him to go out there and not do so. Also, hitting in baseball is like, God, it's mostly just timing, right? And, yep. And hitters.
And guessing.
And they stand in the on-deck circle, and they try to time up the pitcher. Well, if you can't do that,
yep,
it makes it that much harder for the hitters to do so. So for him to have that in his arsenal, plus to have the nasty stuff when he starts using all his pitches, I think it's going to be a little something here, but yeah, we'll see. It's only one start, and it was against the Rockies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still think that overall, like the ceiling is there with him. I think at one point he can be like that guy. I do still think, because he's just on an innings limit. So I don't see him as necessarily like their five-star solution for this season. To me, I think I look at him more as a bridge gap, you know, a bridge gap between him and when Alec Manoah gets right, or when Ricky Tiedemann's ready to make his debut, and that's fine. That's all he is. He's got a big enough ceiling to contribute this season if that's his only role. But yeah, I do think that it's still very much a work in progress, like you mentioned there. Next start against the Padres, that's going to be a very, very interesting to see how he goes up against that lineup.
We do have to mention that they did platoon, like we did say. They just did it in the opposite order that we were expecting. Bowden Francis did come in, and he looked basically the same. Obviously, with less times through the order, the results were better. He had that same exact approach last year, you know, in favorable matchups, one time through the order. He can get that done. He can be that guy. Until Alec Manoah is up in the big leagues, until Ricky Tiedemann has proven that he's ready for a shot in the show, it's going to be that. It's going to be Yariel and Bowden, depending on the order, I assume. Alec Manoah is starting on Friday. Well, you know, early touch on the farm, but he is starting on Friday, so who knows what happens after that when it comes to Alec Manoah. I do want to mention one more thing on Yariel. You want to talk about confidence? That guy is Max Scherzer-esque in the dugout. Literally won't talk to anybody, is locked in. He looks like a guy that hasn't moved at all. He looks like a statue in the dugout because he's locked in so hard. So I like to see that. You don't see that very often with this Jays lineup. Obviously, everybody talks to everybody. They're all having a good time in the dugout. I do like to see, because we talk about it all the time, whether it's a joke or not, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of emotion in that dugout sometimes. I'm glad that he looks like he's going to be somebody who does have that. We have to talk about now the offense before we get to Jose Berríos in Game 3, because a guy that has finally started producing Game 1 and Game 2, a good friend and good, what's the word I'm looking for? Rob's big on him. Dalton Varsho, homered in back-to-back days, Game 1 and Game 2, grand slam in the first inning of Game 1, or Game 2, sorry, that completely set us up for the rest of the game for Yariel de Cruz in his debut. And then John Schneider sits him like an absolute coward. And I'm done. I'm done. I'm done with the idea that you could just sit a guy who's homered in back-to-back games. They did it against David Schneider. Sure, whatever, fine. You minor league guy. Sure, he does 150 ABs total. I get it, whatever. Dalton Varsho, the guy that your front office traded the number one prospect in your system, a top five prospect in baseball, and an everyday left fielder for a guy who hits 20 home runs a year, and the only time he didn't, you traded him in that offseason. You traded back those two pieces for Dalton Brochot to hit number 5 or 4 or 6 in your lineup, and you sit him the second that he starts to actually get hot. I do not care in what analytical world that tells you, you know what, matchup doesn't look good today. He's hit 2 home runs, one that literally won you the game. I am done with John Schneider making these lineups. And if anybody pays attention to our lineups on Blue Jays Center, take a look at the lineup for game one against the Yankees. Take a look at it. It's probably the worst lineup we've sent out all year outside of Daniel Vogelbach replacing Justin Turner in the 4 spot. John Schneider is not serious about making this lineup. And he has thrown out any eye test. Gone out the window. Doesn't matter. IKF can be hitting 300. Doesn't matter. Davis Schneider can be doing everything he can to get in this lineup. Doesn't matter. Dalton Varsho, one of your most invested pieces right now on your team. Doesn't matter. And I needed to get that out because that was ridiculous. Joe Siddle did it on sports on the Blue Jay Central. And I hope that everybody saw that because he was bang on the money.
Mm-hmm. Can I feast?
I was actually going to bring up the Joe Siddle point you mentioned on the Blue Jay Center, Blue Jay Central, sorry, Freudian slip there, pregame show yesterday. He mentioned, and I think he's bang on. I've always said, I do think that deferring to analytics is typically the best move. And obviously, and for John Schneider, in my opinion, it's the only move because he's just like, that's just his role. He's the messenger. Don't kill the messenger. He's the guy who's passing on the ideas from the big office. But yeah, I agree. Like Dalton Varsho, not only did you mention all the stuff that you gave up for him, but by the way, I'm surprised we can talk about Dalton Varsho performing without mentioning Gabriel Moreno stats or all that. I know that's just a sensitive topic for Blue Jays fans, but he had 2 home runs, a grand slam, the grand slam that won you the game. It was the only inning you scored, the only big hit you got. This was a guy who last year, it's been publicized, had struggled with confidence, struggled with carrying the weight of the world, being a big trade acquisition on the team contending, hit cleanup. That was a lot of pressure. This offseason, he had to seek external options for dealing with this confidence stuff. So I think it's a bad look. I just think it's a bad look to move a guy who just started to get hot, moving him out of the lineup for a day. And especially because my whole point with this is that our whole point with Davis Schneider is you're taking him out of the lineup. Sure, the matchups aren't favorable, but who are you replacing him with?
Yeah.
You're replacing him with not a guy who's going to add value, time. You know?
Taking any of these guys out of the lineup only means that KK's in there, IKF's in there, Kevin Biggio's in there. Like, that's what that means. If it was any other option, if we were talking about replacing bench guys for legitimate everyday starters on any big league team, then sure, there's an argument, but not here.
Yeah. And my final point to wrap it around was this is actually like a stem from an argument we were having in the chat, not publicized to all our listeners, but IKF not playing in the game last week because he had been struggling. And my argument, I was actually defending the Blue Jays for that, be saying that, yes, IKF had a good game, but you know what IKF is as a hitter. You know, whereas with Dalton Varsho, that's a guy who you're actually going into the season expecting him to provide some sort of value offensively. You know, this is not a guy who you haven't thrown your hands up and said he's just a platoon player.
Right.
You're a guy who you're hoping he can be an everyday caliber player and giving you, even if it's not a plus bat, at least close to a neutral bat to complement that good defense. And to me, for a guy who like I mentioned earlier, the confidence issues who've been just caught, I feel like, yes, analytics, I get what they are. I get that they're important. I just feel like this situation particularly was a little bit too oblivious to the human element of the game. And I think that's, there's got to be a fine line that just wasn't factored in, unfortunately.
I don't think we've ever had a discourse like this to start a season about how putrid the lineup is. Like, boys, we are like, 15 games into the year?
Yeah.
And we've had like 2 or 3 instances where everyone wants John Schneider's head just for making the lineup card.
Yeah.
It's crazy. This is now twice now, fellas.
That and I've defended him. Like,
sure?
I thought to this point that it was reasonable. Like, if I'm picking nits over Davis Schneider, then you know what, John Schneider, you're doing a fine job. But Dalton Varsho?
No. It doesn't make sense. What it looks like to me is that, okay, we're putting guys in. They need to get going. They need to get, oh, that guy's hot. Okay, he's good to go. We can leave him off to the side for now. That's not how it works, okay? When Davis hit the home run against Houston, yep, on the bench the next day. what? That made no sense. And God, social media had an absolute field day with that one. And as you mentioned, Varsho hit two home runs in back-to-back days. Basically the only source of offense in the first game, or in game two, albeit 91 right down Broadway. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Did a job with it.
Yeah, almost the only source of offense in game one. We scored four runs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Two of them were in garbage time anyway, so.
Exactly. Exactly. And so he's done a job, and you put him out. I'm sorry. But what did Kevin Kiermaier show me, or any of us, that he should have been in that lineup yesterday?
He spent below 100.
Dalton Varsho,
isn't he?
Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And with a lefty on the hill, for God's sakes, how many times, I don't know, I mean, I was listening to the radio broadcast. I don't know how many times I heard Ben Shulman and I can't remember, LaRue.
Chris LaRue.
Chris LaRue. Saying, you know, boy, with the righty on the hill now, boy, Kevin Kiermaier, thank God for that. He's probably feeling like he's so happy. Kyle Freeland is out of the game. What is that telling me that Dalton Varsho is on the bench? And as you mentioned, you both mentioned confidence. Dude's lack confidence. I mean, he's thought last year, you know, I got traded for these guys. Like, I got to live up to this. And it fell apart. Great spring training. Who cares? Awful start to the season. We're all revisiting that again. And he has two good games. All the vibes are back for him. And you put him on the bench. I don't get it, fellas. I just don't. Robbie said there's a fine line between analytics and using your damn eyes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like it's analytics, book, that's it. And it's quite sad, honestly.
Yeah.
The one thing that the analytics, and we mentioned this, is like there's the fine line is also, it's not as if the guy you're replacing him with is really doing much for you anyway. Like, yeah, so it's, yeah, you can defer to the analytics in theory, but like, come on. Like, it's, you're replacing him for Kevin Kiermaier, a guy who's coming in today with an OPS that starts with a 3.
Yeah. That's why I brought up the whole fact about, you know, oh, the guy needs to get hot. And it's like, okay, no.
Yeah. And we saw last year, like, even when lefty on the mound, what did that mean for Dalton Varsho? That meant bunting for a base hit. And how many hits did he actually get last year? Where that's what he actually
hit better against lefties and righties last year. A big part of that is the bunts. A big part of that is a small sample. So that clouds a lot of it. But yeah, he had a higher OPS against lefties and righties last year.
Exactly. Now for a very much positive point, and can't complain about it in any sense for the offense, Justin Turner. I mean, that guy could not be more on fire right now. He's the definitely one of the big reasons why we are 500 coming into these Yankee series, because Justin Turner has an over 1,000 OPS, does he not?
Yes. Hold on, let me try and pull. I think it was like 1,050 or some stupid number.
Yeah,
like
he's batting right around 1,000 OPS in the four spot. Not a whole lot of power per se, but, you know, a lot of gap to gap.
He's got a 386 average. He's second in the big leagues in on base at 481 and an OPS of 1.095. Almost 1,100 OPS. Now, yes, the power ain't there. 7 doubles for Justin Turner. 8 walks to 7 Ks. Boys, he's been lights out. And I'm not going to pat myself on the back. It's too early for this.
It is too early. I want to preface this. I always wait till 150 ABs before I make a decision on how someone's going to be offensively that year.
It is early, but watching the approach, which how many times have we talked about this team not having an approach? Turner's got it, fellas. And yesterday he had 3 hits. Each hit drove in a run. An RBI single, RBI double, RBI single. And that one was a bloop single, but who cares? Numbers, stats, baby. Yeah. And that's all that matters, right? So I've loved it. You know, it's that kind of – if Bo, Vladdy, and Georgie can find a way to get on base, one dude gets hot, Bo starts ripping double after double, get this guy coming up after them, guys. It's a recipe for success, but those first 3 got to get going. But, boy, it's been a revelation watching Justin Turner with guys on base.
I have good news and bad news. Bad news is that I have to dip into my stat genius fact for today because it was going to be on Justin Turner. The good news is that I do have a backup. It's not as positive, nowhere near as positive, actually, but still it'll work. So, yeah, I'll give my Justin Turner take. This is actually a shout-out to Chris Black from Sportsnet. He tweeted this. Guys, let me ask you, what was Justin Turner's value proposition this offseason? Look, you know, he's not Brandon Belt. He's probably not going to be as good of a hitter, but what can he do that Brandon Belt didn't? You guys have an answer?
Runners in scoring position.
Hitting with runners in scoring position. Justin Turner this season. The Blue Jays' Achilles heel last year. That was their thorn in their side. That's why they couldn't we couldn't watch the Blue Jays last year. They were unwatchable, awful offensively because they could not get the big hit in 13 plate appearances. Justin Turner, granted, small sample, prefaced. 13 plate appearances, has an OPS near 1400. He has been Dunedin Vladdy with an runners in scoring position this season. 13 plate appearances, we get it. But yes, he's been awesome. He's been clutch. He's carrying this lineup. And thank God he is, because your top three hitters in your order, like we mentioned, they're just pricey. OPS is in the 600s. We all know the bottom of the lineup, how feeble they can be. And look, they've won the last few series, but it's not as if the offense has been great. You know, like you faced two of the worst pitchers in baseball. Well, the whole pitching staff is terrible, especially Kyle Freeland yesterday. Just awful, awful major league quality. And you didn't really rough him up. I know you scored five runs and you won the game and it was all good, but the offense, there hasn't been necessarily a game where they broke out. They've done just enough to complement their good pitching, but I mean, the same stuff that we were talking about the offense before this homestand, it's not as if it's much of it has changed. It's been struggling, aside from Justin Turner, who's been awesome. So yes, Stat Genius, the positive one, all good for Justin Turner, saving the Blue Jays offense. Now, grand picture, having a 39-year-old savior offense, maybe not the best, maybe not the best action plan for success, but hey, you know what? He's currently way outperforming any reasonable expectation, even for you, Price, a guy who was really high on him.
Oh, I didn't expect
this. He's been outstanding. He's been outstanding.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. If you're going to point to a red flag, the homers are still not there for this team. So despite Justin Turner's 1,000-plus OPS, the homers are still not there, and this team will need to get to a point where at least a couple guys in this lineup are putting balls in the seats. So the Jays have not gotten there yet, and that's obviously a big issue to this offense so far. To finish off the Rockies series, Jose Berríos, another dominant start, probably his best one, as it should have been going against that lineup. And the biggest point I wanted to mention is he attacked them with fastballs. And for Jose Berríos, who is not known for a guy who can blow people away with his fastball and, you know, don't have to rely on his breaking stuff, the fact that he was confident enough to do it and then executed it is what impressed me the most, and I think what will be the biggest difference in Jose Berríos this year in 2024. James.
Oh, fellas, hands down the most, and this is why. A start like yesterday is exactly why, Cole, you and I were talking about Jose Berríos possibly being the ace of the staff. Because early on in the game, he could tell that his slurve, whatever the hell it's called, wasn't going for him.
Yeah.
You know, he hit a guy in the first inning, walked the guy in the first inning, and Kirky threw behind. Not great. And you have second and third, and nobody's putting the ball in play. And he's gone away from using his four-seamer more. And that's what happened in 2022. He was using that thing a lot more, and obviously it wasn't working for him. He's used that sinker and that two-seam a lot more. And boy, oh boy, that thing looked good. I think most of his strikeouts, other than that one to Tovar, he threw him three straight slurves and made him look stupid. Absolutely stupid. Other than that, all of the strikeouts were on the sinker, I believe. A couple on the four-seamer, because when your other pitches play that well, that little sneaky fastball really gets on guys. And when he did not have his slurve yesterday, I get it's the Rockies, but he didn't have his slurve. He allowed two hits over seven innings, went shutout ball. I mean, that right there shows me why he could be the ace of the staff.
He's saving the season. Like, let's be completely honest. Yeah. He's completely saving the season. The offense that we were all worried about, it's given us no reason to not be worried. Like I just mentioned earlier, it's not been great. The pitching staff, we talked about Kevin Gausman, his struggles, Bowden Francis in that fifth starter slot. Chris Bassett, Yusei Kikuchi, they've been good, but Jose Berríos basically looking at the Cy Young through four starts. I mean, that right now, that's what's saving this team. They're 4-0, and it starts. Half of their wins are Jose Berríos starts.
Yeah.
Just how awesome he's been, and you kind of read my mind a little bit there, Cole. He's going to be the focus of the Stat Genius, not in a positive way, but right now we can be really positive about how he's performing. He's been awesome. It's just like he's a guy that he's – when you're struggling, when you need a win, Jose Berríos has been there time after time opening day. You needed a win. Let's get it. You come off a series loss on the home opener. You needed a win. Let's get it. Jose Berríos, when you're struggling in Houston, you couldn't score a run to save your life. I know David Schneider ended up winning that game in the ninth, but Jose Berríos kept it close. He put him in position to get there. He's just been lights out. His ERA is stupid. It's not even good. It's stupid. It's like 1.05 with a whip in like less than one. He's on pace to have an 11 WAR season, which is like unheard of. Like Clayton Kershaw and Justin Verlander never did that in their triple crown seasons. Yeah, it's been it's really early, and there are some concerns that I'll get to. But yeah, Jose Berríos, fantastic. They've needed this because Let's be real. We talked about the positive regression candidates in the lineup. No one has really run away with it. None of those positive regression guys have had a breakout season to start. It's been a little concerning, but what's the reason to be excited about this team so far this season? It's been Jose Berríos being awesome. That's really what saved the season up until this point. That's why the Blue Jays are even in the position they are in as a 500 team. Jose Berríos, awesome. Awesome stuff. He's been their MVP, hands down.
Yep. Also, okay.
I'm going to jump in real quick. Cool, if you have a second. The one thing for me is his ability to get out of trouble. And fellas, we know back in 2022, holy crap, that was bad. Every time a sniff of danger, crap down his leg. You know, Robbie Rutt, he's an opener. And the whole IKF ghost tag that happened, and that could have unraveled the game. But he got out of that, no damage. And even early in this game today, the Kirk – or yesterday, the Kirk throw behind – yeah. That second and third, one out in the first inning, top of the first, he gets a zero on the board, right? So it's such an important job. And he's just – mentally, he's in such a better place, and he looks so good.
Yep, I completely agree. Okay, well, that's it for the Rockies series. The Jays did pull off the Series W after losing game one. And apparently, Rob has got something for you for Stat Genius on Jose Berríos.
Yeah, absolutely. The Stat Genius segment. First of all, let me just preface by saying Jose Berríos, like I mentioned earlier, he's been awesome. He's been awesome, hands down. There are some under-the-hood stuff that does not favor this to continue. And obviously, look, we all know this is not going to continue. He's not going to have an 11-win season. Yes, it's never happened before in the modern era. Like I mentioned, Kershaw and Verlander didn't do it in their Triple Crown seasons, and neither of DeGrom's Cy Young seasons from a couple years ago, he didn't do it. So yes, there's going to be some positive – I'm so used to saying the word, it's just stuck in my brain now. There's going to be some negative regression for Jose Berríos, but there are some stuff that – I don't want to be negative. He's been great, but there are some stuff that is a little bit disturbing. You look at the Baseball Savant numbers, a lot of blue. There's a lot of blue in the exit velocity. There's a lot of blue in the fastball velo. Expected batting average. His expected ERA is actually over 4 on Baseball Savant. His FIP, fielding independent pitching on Baseball Reference, a little bit more favorable in the 350s, but basically, all the analytical numbers suggest that he's been there. There's definitely been an element of luck to this season so far. And look, you obviously need luck to have an ERA of 105 through like almost 30 innings. Like we know that. But I do feel like there is some concerning stuff. Last season, the peripherals all looked better. He wasn't quite as good as he wasn't as good as he is now, but he was very good last season. The peripherals proved it to be a little bit more favorable. All I'm getting with this is saying that. Great start, but I think you can expect some reasonable decline. That's not saying much, but my idea is, look, if his ERA goes up by 250, 2.5 runs a game, you're talking about a guy in the ERA 3.5 in the American League East. Like, that's still an awesome pitcher. But yeah, just something to point out there. I initially had Justin Turner as my stat genius, which would have been a lot more positive and people would have liked it a lot better. But yeah, unfortunately, there are some concerning stuff. I will throw it out there.
Okay. All right. Well, now for the On the Farm section, which is a special edition this week because Rob, myself, and Mo from Blue Jay Center actually went down to Buffalo to cover the Bisons on Sunday. And we'll start with the two interviews that we got before the game. First, we talked to the Blue Jays ranked number 6 prospect, Addison Barger. And I wanted to talk to him about, you know, what has he added to his game and what is missing from his game so far in 2024.
I think I control the zone a little better and do a better job of waiting for a pitch to drive, although it's not always the easiest, especially in AAA. If you're a guy in the lineup, they're not always going to feed you what you want, so you have to be pretty selective.
What about the other side of the ball? What's something that you think you're still needing to work on?
I think just refining, like, being able to play every position, you know, playing right, third, middle, and field. So that's always a lot of work, just a grind.
Okay, so you can see that I am, you know, visibly taller than Addison Barger. I'm 6'2", depending on who you ask, and Addison Barger is 6 feet, depending on where you look. In person, he more looked like 5'11". My point that I'm getting to is the fact that he is an undersized professional athlete when it comes to being in the big leagues. And in doing so, he added 50 pounds in the last couple years, the last few years, to make sure that he could hit for more power. And that is what he was talking about there in our interview. Guys, do you have any thoughts? James, I know you have been paying attention pretty good on the Buffalo Bisons this year.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned, I think it was in the last one, that Barger starting to heat up, and I think he hit a 450-foot moonshot in the last podcast, and you talked about how he put on 50. I mean, it makes sense. Dude's just launching baseballs recently. But, boys, let's start with the Buffalo guys, because we could sit here and talk about basically the entire Jays' top 15 prospects. They are all buzzing right now, and that's something we couldn't say last year.
Yeah.
They were all kind of like mediocre and, you know, hitting under 200, and everyone's like, well, how's the Jays' prospects? Yeah, they're terrible. So let's start with Addison Barger, as we're talking about him right now. He had another great day yesterday. I mean, you guys were there for it.
Yeah.
Albeit every player offensively for the Bisons. 17-0 just demolishment. It was crazy.
The largest shutout in Bisons history.
And you guys were there live for it. That's awesome stuff. By the way, great stuff, fellas. Great job out there. Anyways, so far in only 13 games, right? 48 at bats in the season for Barge. But he's hitting .292 with a .414 OBP and an .893 OPS. And we all know he plays third base. You know, and that's been a
And he plays the outfield as well.
Yes, he does. A little bit of everything. According to this page, is outfield, third base, and short. So there's that. But, boys, he's been mashing baseball so far in the spring. Or, no, season. And the 9 walks to 8 strikeouts as well. Everything has turned a corner for him. He got hurt at the beginning of last season for the Bisons and really couldn't get his feet going until later on in the year, where it didn't fully get going for him, but a healthy start to this year. And oh boy, is he starting to put it all together. And a lefty bat at third base kind of seems like a match made in heaven for this Jays.
Exactly. Exactly. And we will get to another lefty bat before the end of this on the farm section. And I did bury the lead, but I did it on purpose. We also talked to the Jays' number one prospect and a top 10 prospect in all of baseball, and the guy that seems to have the most promise in this organization. It was Ricky Tiedemann. And we got it was actually Rob who spoke to him. And
You mentioned there, talking to Ricky Tiedemann, Blue Jays' number one prospect. I tried to cover a lot of sundry and baseball-related topics because I know how excited people are to meet Ricky Tiedemann. Try to cover all the bases. We haven't quite released that interview just yet. We're going to do it in the next couple days. But just for you guys, special audience here, we're going to play a little bit of clip to get you prepared for it.
No, it wasn't one of those draft days where you were certain about getting picked. It was kind of just on my toes about, like, who's going to pick me. I haven't gotten any calls, you know, just talking to my advisor, seeing what he could do to negotiate. And it was kind of just like a last second thing. They didn't call me or anybody. I think they spoke directly to my agent at that time. So it was pretty exciting, but definitely nerve wracking.
What did you know about the Blue Jays organization once you got drafted? Was there much or?
Not much, not at all. Yeah. I mean, the year prior coming out of high school, we were talking to them as well, but nothing too deep. I didn't really know too much about really any team at all. So nothing pro ball related that I really knew about.
And one of my biggest takeaways that I'm not sure there was anything too redeemable that I got out of the entire interview, like you did with Barger, where it was clearly like a strategic baseball related issue. To me, it was just the aura of talking to Ricky Tiedemann. You can tell he's been preparing for interviews. He knows he's going to get a big stage at the big league level. And to me, he was awesome, awesome interview. And it was just a great time. Thank you to Ricky and the Bisons for hosting us. It was just an awesome experience. And can't wait for the interview to drop. And I can't wait for Ricky Tiedemann to make his big league debut, because by all accounts, it's going to happen at some point this year. Not sure when, but we're all very excited.
When should he start next, James?
Well, he pitched on Thursday.
Yeah.
So
tomorrow.
It must be tomorrow.
Right? It's got to be tomorrow, Wednesday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, it should be. Yeah, it should be tomorrow. Awesome. So we'll see how that one goes. And by the way, fellas, bravo. Like, great shit, fellas. I mean, my goodness. Big conversations with the two of the biggest prospects, other than Aurelvis, but down there in Buffalo.
You'll get there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Fantastic, guys. Now, Ricky Tiedemann's last start, we talked about it on Thursday. I think, for me, it was his best stuff of the season. And we talked about it, you know, the last few pods, we talked about, you know, the weather was crap. Wasn't great. And that, you know, his last down, he walked 4, didn't strike anybody. Wasn't great. The command was still a tad off in his last outing, 2 hit batters and 3 walks. However, let me do some math here, quick math, 11 outs that he did get, 7 were via the strikeout. So he had that going, only allowed 3 hits over 3 1/3, 3 2/3. So better, still not quite where he wants. That's why he's just going to take his sweet time, especially with the Jays. The amount of rotation depth that they have right now, with Manoah still down there, and now with Yariel Rodriguez, they can give Ricky the time to really figure it all out at the AAA level and really, you know, I guess, grow him to the maximum he can get to instead of rushing him up to the big leagues. Like, we all kind of thought it might happen.
And, like, they rushed Alek Manoah up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which ended up being okay for him in the short term. Yeah. But, yeah, obviously, as we know now. I will say, though, I think for the Blue Jays fans interested, the most interested, I should say, our biggest takeaways from Buffalo yesterday was actually who wasn't there. Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson, they all came back to Toronto. It's no announcement yet, but you're seeing all the buzz on Twitter. I think BNS tweeted there's expectation that they'll be activated tomorrow for tomorrow's game against the Yankees. There was a hope that it would be today. It looks like it's going to be tomorrow. Danny Jansen was activated. However, we saw him yesterday. He came out of the game early. We're a little bit worried there for a second. We're like, oh, did he aggravate something? But no, it was just to get him off his feet so he can come back to Toronto. He's not in the lineup today, but he'll be ready to go hopefully as soon as tomorrow as well. So I think that's our biggest news, is that unfortunately we didn't have any update on the injured guys. They look all good to go, and they'll be good to go tomorrow, looks like.
Yeah, and we will be posting, if Ricky does start tomorrow and that gets announced, that's when the interview will go up. Also tomorrow on Blue Jay Center, the Addison Berger one's already there. And we have two more coming. Oh, one more to finish off this section in today's podcast. It was another interview we posted last night. Spencer Horwitz, player of the game yesterday for the Buffalo Bisons. He got on base 6 out of 6 times. He has been an on-base machine this year, and it isn't even coming necessarily from his bat. It's been his eye. He has been walking a ton, and we spoke to him after the game as well.
It was a good day at the plate, not just for me, but for everyone. I got some pitches to handle. I was really happy with my first at-bat, and that really settled me in. I think it was like a 9 or 10 pitch at-bat, led to a walk, and that kind of started the day off right. I think that kind of competitiveness is what we showed throughout the day is just not going to throw out bats away, even when the score starts to get out of hand, and we saw that all day.
How important was it to get a win before going on a 6-game road trip?
Yeah, it's always important to finish the week strong and going into the off day. And, we were really talking about it this morning, how we didn't want to lose the series, and we'll take a split when we can.
You have obviously rocking a 1,000-plus OPS right now. Is this the best you've ever felt so far?
I don't know if this is the best I felt, but no, yeah, it's definitely a good start. At the start of the season, it's definitely important to start well, and this is definitely the best I've started in the season, so yeah, it feels good.
What have you had coming into this year?
What do you mean?
To your game.
It's just consistency. That was my goal this offseason, and being healthy, being a little more physical, and it's starting to pay off.
As a hitter, what's it like walking a bunch more than you would prefer would be getting hits?
Yeah, walks, I've always been taught that walks are just as good as hits. So I think that helps me with when I can take my walks, I do. And so that's how I view walking, and I think it helps me a lot.
Those are the big value propositions. We also spoke to Casey Kendall. That interview will be coming later on Blue Jay Center.
Bison's manager, by the way, for those.
Bison's manager, sure. Yeah. He spoke about the philosophy around the entire Bison's team, which it is. You got to be prepared to walk. Those are the guys that are going to be valued in the big leagues he expects in the next 5 years are going to be guys that see the ball really well out of the pitcher's hand, can control the strike zone, and guys that, you know, actually do put bat to ball rather than put balls in the seats. He thinks that those guys are going to be of higher commodity in the next coming years in the big leagues. Spencer Horwitz is at the top of that list. They're a big OPS team, and that's the reason why Horwitz is leading off, because he leads the team in OPS and has the best eye. James?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the OPS of, almost 1,100. And he's hitting, you know, you talked about the walks in the interview, and it's still his batting average, Rob's favorite stat, 395, which is, regardless of Rob liking the stat or not, it's still
that high. You can't,
it's ridiculous.
You're forced to acknowledge it.
Yeah. And boy, the OBP is just a shade under 560. I mean, that's just absurd. Wow. So he's been just...
Go ahead, Price. Sorry.
I'm just sitting here watching Daniel Vogelback take it bats, and I'm just like, oh,
yeah.
My God.
And that's the
interesting
actually
my part. Transition. Yeah. That's actually my transition. I think Spencer Horwitz is a major league caliber hitter. I think he's a major league caliber hitter right now.
Yeah.
The only issue is that, like we mentioned, with this roster spot, there's just not a good roster composition that the Blue Jays have. Where he can get every day at bats, we have
but
a line.
You and I talked about it yesterday. I disagree because at the onset and the initial thoughts that you're thinking about, you're like, well, yeah, there's nobody he's going to take, and even if he takes Daniel Vogelback's spot, they're not using Daniel Vogelback, so that doesn't mean that he's getting any at bats. And then I think that you and I came to the realization that, you know what, like, if he's doing this or doing even just, you know, obviously not this, but if he's doing even something close to this in the majors, then he's taking Ernie Clement as well. Like, he'll take those at-bats as well. He'll take the David Schneider at-bats. Funny enough, David Schneider, can it left? You're a can it righties, right? Well, then you have a guy that can on the other side of the ball who hits from the left side, Spencer Horwitz. So I do think that if he continues this over the next month, Spencer Horwitz is going to get the call. Vogelbach's going to get the suitcase packed. And then he's going to be taking at-bats away from Clement and David Schneider.
Yeah, you'd hope. I still think that I don't think Clement has options, does he?
No, but Vogelbach would be the roster move, and then Horwitz would, in my opinion, would be preferred over Clement, and then also
I still think the roster shuffle is still a little funky. I still think when you have a 39-year-old DH and Vlad, who needs DH days, and George Springer, we all know you don't want him playing too much on that turf. I do think it's tough for a first baseman. I'm actually a little bit more intrigued with the Barger element. I think that's a guy who can come in and slot very favorably. You know, he was one of the guys who we mentioned a few podcasts ago when we said we don't see IKF as a long-term solution this season. We see more of a stopgap until Addison Barger's ready. To me, I think that's a guy who's going to force the Blue Jays' hand quicker than Horwitz, in my opinion. I think that's the more bigger takeaway in terms of roster move coming up.
Yeah, Barger's the higher-ranked prospect. Obviously, he just hasn't gotten off to the same absurd start that Horwitz has gotten, but he does have the positional versatility that Horwitz doesn't necessarily provide. And, like I said, this won't happen in the next couple weeks. This won't happen in even 3 weeks. But at the end of a month, at the end of May, let's say, I bet you whoever's hot at that time, who's ever having the better season at the time, that's the guy who gets the call.
No, eventually, like we mentioned, Blue Jays offense, unfortunately, it's not one that's going to keep many guys who are hot down in AAA. I do think if eventually, yes, these guys, if they continue to be hot, they're going to play their way onto the roster. The Jays lineup just doesn't have enough to justify keeping them down there. So, yeah, no, the opportunity will be there. I do think it will.
James, do you have any final thoughts before we preview the Yankees?
Well, I mean, I was going to quickly touch on a few of the other guys that are just...
Go ahead.
Just ripping the baseball apart. Yeah, I mean, you talked about AAA, how the whole team is just mashing. And Aurelvis Martinez, the number two prospect.
Tank yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Unreal. I mean, 318 with a 375 OBP, an OPS of just a shade under 900 on the season. He's mashing baseballs. Leo Jimenez, who's the fifth-ranked prospect, has an OBP of 500 on the season. Let's keep going here. We talked about Addison Barger. Now we're going a little bit lower, right? We go Alan Rodon in AA. 314 with a 368 OBP, and he hit two bombs yesterday for the Fisher Cats. He rose on the scene last year and was outstanding, and he flew through the rankings. He is now right now at the seventh ranked prospect, but I think he'll be ahead of Leo Menes at one point. Adam Macko, Jays fans know the name very well. One of the other pieces
is Oscar
from Seattle. He came over and was and then the first half of last year, not great. Found something. And he had a ridiculously good end of the season, and his second start of the year, well, he went five innings of four hit ball, didn't allow a base runner, walked one, and struck out five.
In New Hampshire?
In AA now, yeah. So he was in Vancouver last season, made that jump, and made a really good start there.
Because we need him to be Jose Berrios, and we need Eric Swanson to be Edwin Diaz before that trade makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, geez. And then Josh Kasevich, who obviously Blue Jays draft pick, hitting 472. Again, I think this is he's in New Hampshire as well. Hitting 472 with a 500 OBP as well. He's raking. And the last guy, the guy I couldn't pronounce his damn name last time, Marutis. I'm going to go with that one. He pitched again.
Get it right.
So we talked about it in his last outing, went four innings of no hit ball. And we're like, well, that's pretty good. It's his first outing. Who cares? It's a Dunedin, whatever. He's a teenager. And he followed up with 4 1/3 of one hit ball. In his next outing. So he has been dominating, and those are his first two outings ever in professional baseball. So he's looked really good. The farm system right now, I know it's early April, they're all performing. It looks quite nice down in the farm.
I want to mention all of this, guys, that is a bit underrated when it comes to the start that these two teams are having. This is in cold elements. This is in rough temperatures in Buffalo and in New Hampshire. And the fact that the offense is as good as it is in these kind of temperatures, and even some of the arms is still doing pretty well, like that's, I think, a very positive sign to the start for these two teams. Okay, we got to get to the Yankees series because it is a big one. We have, roughly 10 minutes left in the show. Let's start with who's on the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays. And Rob, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, so tonight the Blue Jays Actually, right now they're starting a three-game series with the Yankees. I believe we're in the second inning. Chris Bassett on the mound for the Blue Jays. Last time out against Seattle, it was best known for the 115 pitch performance. That was interesting there. He's going on the mound today. Hopefully, we'll see how he navigates against this Yankees lineup. He got off to a bit of a slow start early on. His first couple starts weren't pretty. He got back to his form last start against Seattle. But as we all know, from talking to our buddy Rob last week from Mariners Madness, the Mariners have a feeble lineup, even more feeble potentially than the Blue Jays. So take it for what you will. He'll have a much, much bigger task today against a very, very good Yankees lineup who the Yankees have just been red hot, storming the AL East right now.
The top of the order has been underperforming. I wanted to mention that. The top of the order for the Yankees have also been underperforming, except for Juan Soto. He's unreal.
And Volpe. Right. They put him in the leadoff.
Oh, yes. Gotcha.
So it'll be quite the task. And unfortunately, all of you listening will already know what the result of that start will have been when it already happened because we're recording now. But let's the future. Let's go back in the future and let's pray that when fans listen to this, it'll all be good.
And then in game two will be Yusei Kikuchi, right? And then game
against
three
Carlos Rodon,
against Carlos Rodon, who's been hot to start the year. Obviously lost, had a rough year last year. Year last year with the Yankees. Been fantastic so far in his early starts in 2024. And then for game three, it should be Rodriguez.
Yeah, Clark Schmidt against Gosman.
Gosman, right. Gosman.
According to the score, it says Stroman and Gos, so I don't know.
Yeah.
No, oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yes, it does say Stroman and Gos.
Stroman, okay.
Yeah, and then Stroman, obviously, we all know, had the good start against us last time. So this Jays lineup needs to do better than they did against the Yankees last time. Hopefully that is what happens this time.
Here's my closing thoughts. This homestand has been excellent so far. 4-2, that's all you could have asked for. We've seen the biggest problem with this Blue Jays team last season, aside from the more big picture, we all know it was the offense, but they just really struggled against the AL East, and that's got to change. You can't be 10 games under 500. We've seen this team struggle really against any pitching, but especially good pitching. We know that good teams, they're going to feature good pitching. That's why they're good teams. So it'll be huge. This is a huge series. You win this series right here, that's a big statement against a really good opponent who also happens to be in your division. I think if you go 3-for-3 in terms of series wins, it'll really help bring even more positive vibes back to the fan base. Beating the Yankees is always a really good feel. Beating them in a series will be massive. So I think it's a massive series, especially for Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman, two guys who have gotten off to a little bit of uneven starts. Really tall task. If they perform well, I think we'll be feeling really good heading onto the road to San Diego and then Kansas City.
The Jays last year at the beginning of the season, despite obviously they had a great start, but one thing that they were really good at was ending streaks. Famously last year ended the undefeated streak for the Tampa Bay Rays. So hopefully the Jays can end the hot streak that the Yankees are on. They're 12-4 coming into today. James.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, Rob, you want to finish off the homestand strong. And let's see, like you win this series. Well, then you look at that whole AL East record. You're 2-2 against the Rays, and you're 3-3 against the Yankees. I mean, if you I take that in a heartbeat.
Excellent.
500.
The
problem wasn't that they were bad against the AL East last year. It's that they weren't even competent. You don't have to go 10 games over 500. We know it's a tough division. There's no bad teams, but at least show that you belong. Don't be 10 games under 500.
That's why we talked about it in the last one, about the Seattle one, right? We talked about winning the series against Seattle, but not being able to sweep the series. Right. Even if you lose the series in Seattle, you go to the divisional record, the Jays record against divisional teams, and it's not great. So you already kind of wrote that off. If they can turn this around, it looks a little bit differently. So playing interdivisional, as much as you play them less as you used to, it kind of makes it that much more important.
Yep. No, huge series. No questions about it. Yankees in your home ballpark. You don't need to say much more than that. Two big starts for two guys that need it, Chris Bassett and Kevin Gausman. Hopefully they can bounce back the way that we want them to. And then the Jays will go back on the road to San Diego in the next one for the podcast that comes on Sunday. For all the content that you got today, obviously comment below. Talk to us about what guys you want us to talk to in the minor system. And then, of course, what else you would like us to talk about on future shows. As for this one, thanks for watching. James Price, Rob Pintama, and Cole Whiston. You're watching the Blue Jay Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Blue Jay Center on YouTube. Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.